Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey, bosses, and welcome to episode 293 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm sitting in Bangkok, and Sam, are you near me?
I am, but given the scale of the city, and I know where you are near DMK Airport, we're probably about an hour away at the closest distance.
Yeah, without traffic, so it would probably take literally hours just to meet up for dinner or something. I wanted to meet Chris for a quick bite, and we checked, you know, how much effort that would be, and we're just like, you know what, forget it, guys. let's just say goodbyes now.
It takes me a lot. It has to be a big incentive in order to get out of my place and go anywhere in Bangkok these days, because you're always battling, you know. So I've learned it's just better to stay indoors.
Yeah, or not live in Bangkok.
Right. Also a good point. And Johnny, it just took you 5 hours, the world's longest ride from Chonburi at the beach to Bangkok. Why?
So, okay, if I had just taken a taxi directly, it would have been slightly faster, but it would have been probably maybe up to 3 hours just sitting in a car in traffic to come here directly, door to door, and it would have cost me 10 times as much. But what I did was I took a easy $5 taxi to the bus station, hung out for half an hour, took a $5 bus to Annut, which is the main bus station in Bangkok. That was 2.5 hours. You know, I don't think it would have been that much faster in a car anyways, and it was pretty comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I had to take another taxi to my hotel, which was, you know, 30, 40 minutes of just sitting in gridlock, you know, to go 7 kilometers, like, you know, 5 miles or something. So I'm exhausted. I planned for the 1:30 p.m. bus, and I thought, yeah, I'll be here in plenty of time. I'll probably, you know, be able to go get a massage and have lunch and then hop on this call at 5. Mm-hmm. But nope, I was still half an hour late. So thanks for your patience, buddy.
No worries, man. I actually just came back from Vietnam. You were in Vietnam just a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, in Da Nang, yeah.
Da Nang? Okay, I went to Nha Trang. Have you ever been there?
No, but I heard that's the Russian favorite part of Vietnam.
Yeah, it's a super beautiful place. I mean, it's a world-class beach, without a doubt. Very, you know, very good infrastructure. But I was supposed to be there for a week, and I left after like 3 or 4 days. I'm like, what's the point? I'm just like sitting in my room working, studying anyways. I might as well just go back home. I don't like the food in Vietnam as much. The people aren't quite as friendly. But it's overall, it's a great place. A lot of potential there for sure for the future.
My kind of final impressions of Da Nang and Vietnam in general was, if Thailand didn't exist, this place would be fine.
Johnny, those words, I remember you saying this, and those words, I think, were part of the reason why I came back early. I'm like, yeah, it's so true. It's like, it's nice, but then as a comparison, it's just not, it doesn't stack up. But
yeah. And if we have the option of being here, yeah, Vietnam's a little bit cheaper. The beaches are a little bit nicer, especially mm-hmm. if you're not on like an island or something. Mm-hmm. But everything else is better in Thailand. The food, the customer service, the life is just a better place to be.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Yeah. So today we're going to talk about another regional play, or it's not a play, but a regional project.
Yeah.
Gentlemen by the name of Mazi and Deddy have built their charitable dream from the ground up down in Bali, a place that's very popular. And I thought this would be a good kind of, I was planning on airing this a little bit earlier, a little bit of New Year's inspiration for everyone else's charitable ambitions, but it's also a project. It's something that they built from the ground up. And what'll be cool in this episode is we'll get into the actual numbers of how much it costs, and people can see, you know, you could position this basically as a business, but also as a charitable project, as they did, you can see what goes into it, how much it costs to get it started, and how they go about getting funding to keep it sustainable.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it is in Bali, where there's a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of nomads, a lot of people mm-hmm. probably who listen to this either have been, currently live in, or know someone who's there. So it's something that people can get involved in wherever they live. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of those things where at first, before this interview, I was thinking, okay, maybe this is only for people who have already made it. You know, they have a big chunk of money and mm-hmm. they're thinking, okay, now I have, you know, $10+ million. What should I do? Maybe I start a foundation. But as we're going to find out in this episode, you don't have to wait that long. You can literally get started for, $10,000 and just kind of start now. And let's hear from the guys and we'll jump back in on the outro. And I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate as well, because I'm sure a lot of people who listen to Invest Like a Boss are thinking, I just want to make money. I'm not thinking about spending money, especially on someone else. So let's take a listen to the episode and then we'll jump right back in.
Yeah, and just everyone stay tuned, because at the end of this episode in the outro, we're going to give away our first three books. We're giving away three books at the end of each month, March, April, and May. So we're going to draft, I'll show you guys how we do it,
Whoa.
our first three winners, and we'll announce them at the end in the outro. So look forward to that.
Well, I'm excited for that as well. So let's get started.
Hey, bosses, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. The show will be right back.
Mazi and Deddy, what a pleasure to have you guys on the show. Good morning to you in Bali.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Sam. It's been a long time. I've been listening to the show for like, what, 3, 4 years since it's been going on, and finally we have a good opportunity to get on.
8 years,
Yeah,
buddy.
thank you.
Eight
Thank you so much.
years.
Time goes by fast. We're older than
Even
I anticipated.
Deddy knows it's been going on for 8 years.
Yeah, you could lump COVID into 1 year. That's why I
That's
think I've
right.
made that a
That's what
little.
happened. It's a time warp. Yeah. Now, we're not quite as young and youthful as we were looking in the original covers, but hey, we're getting more wise and I'd like to say making less mistakes, but I don't know. This year might prove differently.
You got to learn through those mistakes. How do we push them through?
Just want to give the listeners kind of a big picture of what you guys have done, because I think it's important, like, to capture the vision of what you guys have built, which to me is super inspiring. At the beginning, and then go into kind of some of the details, because I don't want to miss the opportunity to paint the picture of what you guys put together and what I think is a really quick amount of time. I mean, Mazi, like, I remember when you were telling me, I don't know, it seemed like it was only a year ago, and you were telling me about a little fundraiser that you're doing to start a little like after school project in Bali. And then it kind of was like one ear out the other. I'm like, oh, Mazi's flirting with doing a charity idea. Like, what a, that's great. That's it's very inspiring. But that I didn't think anything of it. And then must have been just 4 or 5 months later, you sent me a photo or a video, and it was of like the cement foundation that had all been laid. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is not just some novel idea anymore. Like, it's actually going forward. I was super impressed. And then we fast forward to where we are tonight today. So maybe Daddy could start just giving us like, what have you built now? What's the name of it? Where is it located? Just kind of the picture of where we are today.
Yeah, so now we have about 200 students enrolled here, and we have about maybe 150 coming on a weekly basis. So I started with Denny, as he mentioned, when he told me about the program. And the first I visited, we were having classrooms in the back of a basketball court. And actually, I think, Sam, I have a picture of that that I shared with you. It's about 25 kids. And I told Denny, like, the program was amazing, but there's dogs running around. This is Asia. I knew rain would be coming down. I'm like, when we're ready to get a little bit further, let's do it. Let's find the place to do it. And Sam, you having lived in Asia, you know that I'm amazed about how fast things could happen here. Like, I'm walking by a street, and 2 days later, there's a full-on coffee shop set up. The guy doesn't need to go and buy like the most advanced equipment, but he'll go and buy a blender and like espresso machine, and it's there. And I'm like, I knew that that's possible to do in Asia. It's possible for us to have an impact right away. And then, yeah, we're going to break some things and make some mistakes and get them wrong. But program has grown through that, through 3 kids initially. So when I came in, it was about maybe 20 kids up to about, 200 kids coming right now. And we have a space. It's called a 2 ara. An ara is about 100 square meters, so about a 200 square meter space that we saw back in what, about August, for rent. And we were able to take that for about 15-year rent to be able to build a center on it. Daddy's aspiration originally was to get the building going in 2 months. And I kind of like laughed at him. But the beauty that we were both right and wrong in some ways. The beauty is, yeah, it took a little bit longer. It took us about maybe, I think, about 5 months. But within 2 months, we had a roof on top of here and we were holding classes. And there's some pictures of that I shared with you. Like, with a dirt floor, with the cement still exposed, we went up from 20 kids to about 60 kids coming just because there's more focus and concentration. And the programs that we're running here, We are a learning center because we don't want to compete with the educational system here, but we want to add to it. So we run programs based on English first because we realized having English allows kids to have a different level of exposure into careers and mindset that from things around them. And from then, we kind of give them the opportunity of different careers that exist. For me, that's a big passion of mine to know the things that people can do and give them those things. Like, I'm a product manager. It's a role that I didn't know that existed until I was about maybe 23, 24. And for kids to learn these things outside of hospitality, farming, and shopkeeping, it's incredible. So yeah, the program is to go from English into life skills, into entrepreneurship, and basically allowing kids to kind of take that confidence to know that they could do all these other things.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about the building. I mean, that for me is like what really brought the project to life. You know, how did that go about, like, in terms of build versus lease? You know, you guys built like a school from the ground up. So that's when I saw like that coming to life, I'm like, wow, like this isn't like some small little operation or idea. Like this is like legit, you know, creation. You know, basically took land and built the building. So how was that decision made? And maybe you can also paint the picture of like what the actual facility looks like right now.
Yeah, so the longer term lease model is actually a common model in Indonesia for businesses and for foreigners specifically. Non-Indonesians are not allowed to own land. And for an organization to own land, it's still a lot more hoops to jump. So because of that, also being tropics, buildings are built to last a certain number of years. So it's rather common to be able to do that. Honestly, if we were looking to for what's called freehold land, A, we would have never been able to afford a space to do it. And B, we would still be looking 6 months later to be able to find it. But this area, the owner of this land actually knew that a school would bring community here and would bring positive impact. So they gave us a very, very good deal. We're actually happy to share the cost of it with you. Didi, I believe the cost was, the way that the cost is done is per ara, which is per 100 square meters per year here, which I believe our cost was 8 million per ara per year. 8 million Indonesian is about 500 US dollars. So our cost is about $1,000 per year for the lease here.
For the land.
For the land. Plain land, which is pretty low. So that's about less than $100 a month.
I can't even comprehend how that's a filing fee in the USA, you know, like.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it wouldn't even get you started.
You're renting the land. I mean, it's in Bali. I don't know too much about Bali. I've seen photos of it. It looks like a nice area. So you're renting the land for $1,000 a year. Is that right?
Yeah, a 200 square meter land. For comparison, if we were to go to tourist areas, the land would probably be about 4 to 5x the price that it is where we are. We are about maybe 15 to 20 minutes outside the tourist area, which also allows us to get into the community kids. But these are kids that a lot of their families work in those areas and are able to do it.
Got it.
But yeah, because of that, we took a 15-year lease on the land. To start off, we paid for the first 2 years, and now we paid for the third year and have that ongoing. And after that, yeah, it was a matter of getting the building together. We did stumble on some of the building costs. Obviously, we thought it would be a lot lower than it was. But in hindsight, I'm kind of happy that we did it in the way that we did. This was an interesting balancing act between Daddy and I, because Daddy was ready to put a wooden shack on here and like start going. And I was like, no, we're going to slow
more
down.
Authentic.
Like, well, we actually did consider bamboo structure for the place. And Daddy was right. You know, and what I was wrong about is that I saw that when we had those exposed bricks and dirt, it made a huge difference. Like what happened is, like, I saw the community start coming in and they contribute to it. So it allowed things to start going. But then on my end, I think it was good that I pushed so we built a little bit more detail. So this place will hopefully last for 15 years. I mean, honestly, other than things that need to change in the tropics. So yeah, we were, one interesting thing we did with is we actually kind of quote unquote finished the building. What was it back in November before our rainy season began, but because we had done it really, really cheap, the initial roof that we put in the place, I was in America visiting my mother, and I got a video from Daddy with a panic showing a bunch of kids in here and with the roof basically halfway caving through with a bunch of water coming through.
Ooh,
and he was like,
dangerous.
Oh, we have a problem. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's not a fun. Well, dangerous because there's also electricity in here. So I worry about Daddy at that time, but we really get everybody out. We actually closed for about a little bit more than a month to redo the roof. So that put about almost about 10K in addition to our budget to redo that. So it's these little things that you'll consider. There's things in terms of cost that are much cheaper, and there's things that are similar or more expensive that we need to get into America. But you know, my biggest takeaway is when you get the momentum going, things come.
So give us a visual walkthrough of the place. I mean, not on camera, but just paint the picture for listeners of like how many rooms it is, how are you guys set up, what are different facilities or amenities?
Certainly, Sam. So there are three rooms. So the first one, we dedicated for like English class. And then the second one, entrepreneurship, where we teach these kids about the concept of being a business owner or an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And the last one is computer labs. So the last one, the one that we actually use right now, it's a computer labs where at the moment we have 15 laptops combined with also computers. Maybe you want to a little bit speak more about the...
So initially we were planning on having one classroom and a little outdoor play space. But actually, as we saw more kids coming, we saw that beyond about, I would say, 30 kids, we get chaos. So it was hard to get them to pay attention. So at that time, we divided it into three smaller rooms. And right now, what we've done is we've divided the classes into different ages as well. So there's one for smaller kids, mainly 5 to 10, and one about 10 to 15. And then when there's older kids, we have smaller rooms, breakouts with them in the computer labs, and teach them things that are a little bit more practical life skills. So there's three rooms in the school, and we have gladly, because there's room to grow, because the community is there, we leased one more aura behind the school, just because the prices go up astronomically here. It's true that I mentioned to you that it was low, but the prices have gone up about 50%. And the owner of this place basically said, I like what you guys are doing. Somebody wants to lease all of my land. He had, I think, about 15 ara in the beginning. So he kept one more ara for us, which we may use as a classroom in the future as well. Once we move forward. So three classes, breaking that into different ages and having this computer space. And our goal is to get this computer space to be a community space, because most people here have phones and don't have computers. So if they want to do something like a resume or something like that, we're opening it up to parents to be able to come and use it like a library computer room in the US.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting just thinking about that, like how when we were in school, it was all about learning to type on a keyboard. And I'm guessing that's still primary, but you don't really teach someone how to type on a phone, right? They just learn. But like on a keyboard, you kind of need practice, or you need actually like dedicated time trying to learn how to type. I think with like a phone, you just kind of naturally like figure it out somehow. I don't know. So I guess kids in that area and parents know how to type quickly on a phone. But if you put them in front of a computer, it's like it's day one, right? With just one finger going around like ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, but moving them past the chopsticks, like doing it. But
right.
It's interesting, the level of these kids. Some of them pick up things so incredibly fast. You know, I was teaching an Excel and budgeting class, and in some, it was a little bit challenging for me to teach some elements. And then one of the kids in here, granted, he was a little older, he was 17, was basically done with my study plan in the first 5 minutes of the class. So I said, let's do this. We're going to do a budget for the year. We're going to multiply. We're going to look at what's going to happen if you need to double certain costs. And within 10 minutes, he's like, okay, here it is. What else do I do? I was like, well.
How old was this kid?
He was 17.
17, okay. Because I was going to say, I never learned this. I never had that class in school. I never learned any like budgeting or anything like that in high school.
I was trying to make, my goal was to make Excel kind of accessible and make it make sense. So it was it was basically saying, how much do your parents spend when they go to the bazaar to buy food and things like that, rather than just multiplying big tables. I mean, my challenge is I'm not a teacher. My family, I have teacher background, but like I have to put myself in the mindset of like a much, much younger kid. It's like, Sam, you know, I'm very, very patient at times, and other times I can lose my patience very, very quickly. So it's a balance of having to bring that, and it's teaching me that as well. But, you know, Daddy has been a great model teacher. And one of the things that we're doing is honestly one of our challenges is to bring more quality teachers in, because we realize we need them to. We need the teachers for the kids to be able to really pay attention. So the magic number we put is about 30 teachers or 30 students per teacher for what we want to go forward. And the interesting thing is, as we mentioned, cost of qualified labor is actually really, really cheap here. So for us to be able to bring teachers part-time here, the cost is what, Dedi, about $6 million per month?
$3 million
part-time. So which $3 million is about $200 per month.
Okay.
Part-time for teachers. The very, very low cost in terms of the things that we can do. So because of that, we try to leverage those things that we could do more. So we realize, hey, I mean, our electricity cost is going to be the same. It's pretty high, but we can actually bring more teachers to bring in more influence into this. And that's what we're doing. That's why we got that other land, for example, for some time to be able to build on that as well as a part of here.
I think personally, and I think the listeners would be very interested in whatever costs or finances that you guys are comfortable sharing, just in terms of how much did it cost to actually build this, get it stood up, and how much like operating costs look like?
Yeah, I'm happy to give you a little bit of a breakdown. I will mention this stuff is on our Patreon if anybody wants to go and kind of dig deeper, and happy to talk with them about it. But our original cost for building the and finishing the program was about 500 million Indonesian rupiahs, which is about $32,000. This was outside the computer lab. And once we actually finished, the final cost of the computer lab were about $42,000, or about, what was it? I think about 650 million IDR. So we went over budget about $12,000. But the great thing was, as we saw things keep going, I had people in terms of friends and family and larger generous donations come in to help. And we ran a fundraiser about a month ago at a fitness facility, fitness and wellness facility here, which brought a lot of the community to help as well. One thing I would say for people doing this kind of project and going forward is we were a little disheartened at some times where we had a hard time raising money outside of our friends and family. And when we talked to people who've run similar programs, they said, hey, you know, you should really be ready to fund some of it for almost 3 years. And then let people see what you're doing, let let them to get into a normal pattern and then have things come in. So we wanted to do, we've thought about what we could do in terms of bringing the community in. Our operating costs from per month run about $1,500 right now. And a lot of that is into facility costs and kind of fixing some of the CapEx things. Like a funny anecdote is we built a place with a certain number of air conditioning and we were in standing here. We're like, well, it's cool. This feels nice. And then the Sunday came when 130 students came into the room. And, you know, we didn't think about 130 people breathing and breathing in and out and adding into that.
Wow.
So that was a funny moment where like Daddy is teaching on top sweating. And like I have pictures of me sweating and like in a bad way. So we were able to get that, you know, it's things like that, that we improved. So that, the roof, some of the things. We did have a large anonymous donor for our computer lab, which really, really helped to be able to bring that in.
That's great.
And our goal is sustainability. Our goal is to get in a place where we could run it at a lower per student per month cost and to be able to have enough come in from donors to be able to have the place run by itself. So our cost per student when we started was about 200,000 Indonesian rupiahs, which is about $15 or $16. And right now with additional students, we brought that cost down to about $11 per student per month, which we're happy with. And we know there's more we could do to bring it down to almost $7 per month. So our only increasing cost right now until we run out of space is going to be teachers. So once we are able to add that, we can kind of keep bringing that cost down because it does. I'm a little bit not surprised, but like as we kind of do things, the cost of running a lot of things around like electricity, you know, paying for the organization, garbage, internet, this stuff does add up and it's a large chunk of it. So now we're like, okay, we have the center, we have the place. Now we want to be able to bring more people to be able to take from that. But if there's anybody that's interested in doing this into their communities, we are more than happy to talk with them about it. There's ambitious plans for us to be able to do more centers. And, you know, Dedi has a plan of 500 centers, which I love and appreciate.
Wow.
But I said, let's focus on this one for about 2 to 3 years, make sure it runs sustainably. And then at that point, we move on and open up additional centers.
Wow. But
there's a hunger in of it in here for sure. Mm-hmm. And we see the impact that it's making.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So I guess when you look at this and you think of the overall cost, it's like, it's kind of like you mentioned, Mazi. I mean, did you go into it knowing you're going to probably have to finance like everything? Or did you go into it thinking like, oh, I'll put in X, $5,000 or something, and then the rest will pick up from contributions?
I personally went into the project thinking I would put in about $10,000. And some of that is from my mother and grandmother as well. I'll take 30 seconds. My mother and grandmother had a school. My family's from Iran a long time ago that was taken away from them. That it was a private school. And then they actually funded 10% of the kids whose families were a little bit less financially off with the tuition of the larger kids. So this was in my blood to be able to continue. And when the opportunity came, I told Daddy he was happy to do it. Having ran businesses before, I knew things would always cost more and take longer. So I was happy to go into it a little bit more. I went in, I would say probably about 5 to 7K beyond what I anticipated. But I was very, very happy to do that because I saw the impact of what was happening. And the best thing, as I mentioned, is that larger people that were kind of that knew once we had the center running when they came and visited, there's a few people. This is another thing I would say is that they came in and said, look, I like what you guys are doing. You're new, so I don't know if you're going to be able to do it long term, but you put in your own money. Because you put in your own money for both of us. And Daddy put in a certain amount of his money as well. I have a Western salary, so it's a little bit higher in terms of what I was bringing in. But in terms of a percentage, he came in at a much higher percentage of his salary. Those people said, because you guys put in your own money, I'm going to give you a chance. And two people kind of gave in and give us funding to be able to have a run rate of another few months beyond kind of what we'd anticipated on. Yeah. But yeah, I anticipated going more. I anticipate as things are needed, I'm going to have to put in here and there. And you get creative as well. Like I rented my house when I was back in the US for a month to somebody that we both know. And I said, hey, instead of giving me rent, donate that money to the school. Funny enough, that was the same time that we needed to put tiles on the flooring. And we had miscalculated the price of tiles on the flooring by about almost the same as the rent that I had at my place, around 2K. And we're like, okay, well, great. Instead of giving it to me, this is serendipitous to send it into there. So we've gotten creative with little things like that as well.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned about $1,500 a month for operating costs. So let's just say more or less 15, 20,000 US a year. Oh, from a lot of like the social media clips and stuff, I see a lot, looks like a lot of Western volunteers coming in, a lot of people coming in teaching different things. So is it possible to have volunteers do all the teaching so you don't have to pay the $200 or $400 a month in the volunteer salaries? I'm sorry, in the teaching salaries?
So our plan is to open every day, so from Sunday, and then all the way to, basically every day from 3 p.m. all the way to 6. And within that, we want to have a different class during those hours. So it depends on just volunteers. Like we experienced a few times where the volunteer says, okay, I come today or I come tomorrow, but then they don't turn up. So as a result of that, it's like, so that's why we want to have teachers. So to have someone there, and the volunteers are just, one could say bonus to help.
Yeah. Okay. I get it.
On top of that, so.
Yeah, I get it. I somehow I didn't see the bigger picture there. But yeah, because you want to have classes. You want to be open every day. You want to have classes every day. You need teachers that are going to be there and reliable and not like, come today, but maybe not tomorrow. And the kids all show up and there's no one to teach.
Yeah, and there's a consistency that's needed. And we also need them practically to be able to speak Bahasa Indonesia as well as English. Mm-hmm. So because a lot of these kids, they are learning words of English through us. So they need the teachers to be able to communicate in both languages. Yeah. We love the volunteer program. We're actually trying to make the volunteer thing a little bit more of a cohesive program rather than people coming once or twice to be able to teach things. And we saw that this was something that was going to be an issue that we need to deal with. So Daddy is designing an entrepreneurship program, which is going to run for 12 weeks right now. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing with that is we are going to bring in different speakers at different topics that fits those elements. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the best ways for us to be able to use volunteers.
Yeah.
We have had a few volunteers who are teachers back in the US and Canada who have been a great help. But these kids, we want to be able to run them through programs that are going to, not be the same thing that you kind of come in and learn a little bit. With the smaller kids, that helps to come in, read a book, to be able to get them a little bit of English. But, if you're going in and scattered as a different teacher every time, it's not going to be able to be of help. So it's a balance of both that we need to be able to have and bring into this. And the entrepreneurship program that we'll run is like, so if I'm a marketing expert, that week we invite that person to come in and speak. If I'm a finance expert, we'd be bringing that person to come and speak. So that fits a lot better into the overall agenda.
So right now you guys have about 200 students. Is that kind of like max capacity for the center? I mean, I guess all 200 are not coming at the same time typically, right? It's like they come every other day or...
We have 200 registered. We have large Sunday classes, which run more than 100 students. Wow. And then on a daily basis, it's, what is it, about 50 or so?
50 to, 70. So that's why we plan to have the class every day. So mm-hmm. then some kids, they can make it on, say, Sunday. Some kids can make it on Wednesday. So then we have a variety option for them as well.
Yeah.
Because if they all come at once, this school will fill it.
It's so, a fun chaos.
But fun chaos.
Their enthusiasm is definitely there, you know.
Yeah.
We start the classes around 4:35 officially, but they start mm-hmm. showing up here an hour early. And ready.
Yeah.
The beauty is that it's not because of their parents wanted them to come. And also it's not because of us, like, wanted them to come. But it's kind of like, the motivation comes from them. So then it's like, it's not really hard work from our side. We just like, okay, here's the structure, here's the curriculum, learn this, and they just like in it. So that's kind of like really, really help
Great.
Us with it.
I checked out the website because this is kind of like an ops question, but good website like this can easily cost, well, let's say in the past I've routinely paid like $3,000-$5,000 to set up. This is like, I mean, it's a pretty fairly simple site, right? It's like a content site, but how did you build it, and like what platform did you build it in? What were the costs associated with that?
I mean, I think that's where the beauty of volunteers come in. So we actually recruited somebody that we knew, one of our good friends who has experience there. He built that on Webflow for us.
Mm-hmm.
The cost is basically, I think, a $30 per month Webflow subscription that I pay for it to be able to run. And that website served us well. We've outgrown it. So I think we moved a lot of this stuff to our Patreon and Instagram. We're mm-hmm. redoing that because it was still about building the school, and now the school is built. But yeah, it was another one of those classic things where we could wait for a month and spend $1,000 to get it perfect or get it going within a week. And I think we had the initial version of that up, honestly, in about 4 days. I mean, it's been improved and ran through. But it was an initial thing that we knew that we could get something that's going to impact us. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, we did it in that way. It's about, in my mind, it's about being able to do things at the time that they're going to be able to make the best impact. If I could speak, I listened to your episode about retirement, I think about a week ago. I'm not sure how the timing of these run, but there was the idea at a later time, if your net worth grows into a certain amount, you could put that money into charities and things that you want.
Mm-hmm.
I read the book Die with Zero about a year ago, which had a huge impact on me in terms of this idea that, hey, even though your money is going to grow, your contribution to those charities is going to grow as much. What those things, when the time that those places need that money most is now. So even if it's a smaller amount that you could be able to put into operations, go ahead and do it. And seeing that with these kids definitely makes the most sense, because these kids are five. You know, by the time that I'm ready to give a significant portion of my net worth, these kids are going to be in their 30s. It's not going to have an impact on them anymore. So now it allows them hopefully to be in a better place, and then to move the further future generations that they have in a better place as well.
Yeah, I never really understood the mindset of like, make as much money as possible, accumulate it, die with it. And then like when you die, it goes to charity, because you miss the whole point of like charity work, which is like impact during your life, but also the fruits that you get from it. Like it's beautiful. I think most people, once they start giving, they want to be giving more full time, or giving full time if they can. But if you wait until you're dead to do that, then you miss the whole beauty of it all along the way.
Yeah, just to add on that, I really love the idea of giving starts the process of receiving.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading the whole the book called Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki, kind of like change.
Yep.
The way I look at the money and the way I look at investment and all that. So yeah, I'm with you there, Sam. Like, it's the whole idea of giving. It's because that from that giving, it's actually this. It's not. I experienced that over and over in my life. Like from my where I came from and to where I am today is because just of that one thing. I willingly give. I want to give not only things like back to the kids, but people that come in contact with me. I say, how can I give and how can I be of service? So this is what values that I want to embed it into these kids as well. It's like, mm-hmm. when you go to the marketplace, my friend, they don't care. They don't care whether you're black, white, orange, what they care is that the value that you create, and the value that you create, it comes from that mentality of giving. So that's kind of like right. where I want to start this, the whole process.
And with regards to like the giving and the contributions, a couple questions on that. Is the local community being supportive at all with like resource and or like funding? And what other ways are you guys, let's say, finding like Patreons or regular contributors to kind of cover this? I mean, I assume you, the initial goal is to be able to break even on your ops cost and then hopefully be able to have a surplus on top of that to expand operations either at this center or additional centers to like Daddy's goal of 500 centers.
So when we started this, we knew that we're going to have to run it through by ourselves for a little bit. And we tried actually to go to the local community. And I mean, there's a lot of hospitality businesses here and to have support. And I wouldn't say that we were shut down, but it was actually much harder than we anticipated in the beginning. Mm-hmm. For anybody doing something similar, I would say in the beginning, honestly, to try to focus not only on friends and family, but on larger people who can make an impact. We know that there's a balance needed on that. You know, we love to have more people on Patreon and making smaller contributions to us just because they could help us spread the word. But to be honest, it's been it's easier to bring in some larger donors versus some smaller donors, mm-hmm. just probably because there's a little bit more income elasticity for people there as well. But we're going to continue this balance of all of it because we want this to be a part of the community. We ran a fundraiser that when we found it hard for people to actually give us money in terms of businesses, what we did is we actually set it up as a donation and a silent auction for them to give their services. So we had some spas donate spa packages. We had a few hotels donate rooms. We had people, this is Bali, so we had people donate Reiki and like yoga classes. And we got very creative with that. And then we had all of those in a large auction. And we were able to do quite well with that. It's one of those things, though, that we can't do more than probably once a year, maximum twice, but you know, at once. But it allowed us to also have a contact into all those businesses to be able to go to them and showcase the stuff that we've done. So our goal is a balance of all this to larger donors, which I know in the beginning, those are the ones that are going to take us a little bit further. Patreons and people are going to be our smaller supporters, which we're very, very happy and lucky to have. And then local businesses, and in terms of these larger events that we could have on a yearly basis. So that's the goal that we want to try to drive in terms of operational sustainability. It may take us a little bit of time to get there, but it's okay because the mission is good and we see the impact that's being.
And Mazi, you just keep bankrolling. Just keep renting out your properties. Live under a coconut tree.
yeah. We are able to do as much as we can in terms of that in Bali. So this Bali has been a good home, and this space has been a great community. So the chance to do it is a privilege. I'm very, very happy to do that. I wish I was better at teaching classes as I am in terms of the business side of it, but we'll get there too.
I will never forget the first video that you sent me of the project. And I don't even know if there was a roof on. Maybe there was a roof on, but for sure it was just a cement structure that was new. And I think Mazi was like walking in and I'm like, oh, cool. Look at this. And all of a sudden he walks in and it's already like overflowing with kids. I'm like, what? They haven't even finished it. And they're already in there. Like kids are already in there learning and you guys are teaching classes. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Like that would never happen in other places, right? Where like going to a half built building and teaching like proper classes. But I think it showed the eagerness of the community and the kids, which was really, really cool. Daddy, it sounds like you've been kind of doing this for a while in terms of like, you know, helping out local community and helping out and teaching kids. But Mazi, I think this is somewhat new to you. Like, how does it feel now that it's like built? Is like the buzz worn off a little bit? Was it really cool to build it? And now it's like, damn, I'm busy in ops, or is it still like really impactful each time you go in?
Well, I mean, Daddy took on the bulk of the work. I mean, I kind of helped him with everything that was around. It is a lot of work here. I had said from the beginning that my goal was to get this place going and get it to be a sustainable path. And once we're there, it's other focuses that I want to be able to have as well. But there's more needed on that. And I'm going to continue to do that. And I see the impact of it. It's hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat and say it's not hard. It's 10 times as hard for Daddy balancing everything that he balances as well here. But the moment that I come in and I see the kids, like I'm, you know, the energy comes in and I understand why we're doing it. And that's why, like, honestly, like, you know, a lot, I know a lot of your listeners probably visit through here. if they want to come in for a volunteer or just a visit, we invite them to do that and just kind of see that buzz for themselves. So I would not say it's easy. And yeah, the buzz wears off until you walk in with the kids in here again. And then it's back on in like in that second. So it's a good privilege to be able to, for sure.
And it's probably pretty cool. Like you always have new kids coming in, right? Because some kids will get older and move on, and some kids will be newer and they'll be full of energy. And so it's always changing. It's quite dynamic in a sense.
Yes.
Okay. So guys, where do we go from here? Your next goals are become sustainable in terms of operational cost and then expansion. Daddy, you mentioned you want to open 500. That's the rest of your life work. Maybe you can go a little faster, but wow, that's a super ambitious goal. Tell me more about kind of where that came from.
The idea behind that is to, again, it's also, Brother Sam, it's about sustainability, right? Create something to sustain. So what the plan behind that is rather than build a center, we go and then go to the remote places and then just hire one teacher there and then bring 30 maybe plus children, and then we can provide them with the curriculum and also the things like laptop and also. So that's kind of like the idea behind it. So if we have, so throughout Indonesia, so the idea is to expand it in a way that is, we don't have to go there physically, because I don't think I can do that. I cannot spread myself too thin like that. So how can we just hire teachers and train them, give them the curriculum, and then provide them with the tools needed to teach these kids?
Right. You
know? Daddy's partner is a teacher. So what we're doing is we're putting programs just in the same way that you would operate and you know, run many subways into programs that you could take, and people can be able to run that program in different places as well. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is a big focus for us yet, but as we're doing this work, we want to try to see how we could use this work to be replicated in other places as well. Because obviously the leverage on this is huge. And as Daddy said, you know, all you need is the same thing that we had, you know. You need a garage or you need like a basketball court for you to be able to start this. And when there is a desire, we will happily kind of start to bring that out. I don't think it'll be our initial focus for a little bit, but for sure it makes sense for us to think about everything we're doing in that approach of how is this going to work for a larger case. Because as we said, you know, here we're going to tap out on the number of students that we're going to be able to have, but it makes sense for the work to be able to go further.
Well, guys, I think this is it's a really inspiring story. I mean, I've showed like photos of what you guys built, even to like my mom, and she's like, you know, you can tell her, she's like, it was getting emotional watching it. It's like, it's such a cool thing. And she even said like, this is something she would like to like contribute to and stuff, because this is like very, very close to her. So I hope you can find more and more ways to get the project out. Like on a, you know, this is a relatively small center in Bali, but it's, I think it has a very big message, you know. And Amazi, I know we've talked about this, is like, how do you use like social media and other platforms to try to like tell these stories? Because also what I realized, like even in my Instagram feed, it's like every 2 months, I just want to get totally off Instagram, but I can't, you know, but every 2 months I have to go through my Instagram and like clean up the feed, because it starts getting a little bit more oriented to like hockey fights and baseball brawls and like girls in bikinis and stuff. So I have to like continually work to just clean it up. It's like weeding out my mind in a sense, right? And I would like
just go
more
and like all of our story.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I want to train the algorithm to have more stuff like this, like positive messaging. I mean, I've been doing it to a degree with some things, but I think the point is like, it's not easy to find stuff like this on social media. You know, it's not easy to find like these kind of feel good stories. And one thing I've noticed is like, there's a lot of people that's doing really good work, but they're not talking about it too much. And I'm not sure if it's just like, hey, you know, I want to do good work for good work's sake, but I also think it's a really big missed opportunity. Like Child's Dreams, for one, like I've talked to them, they've built, Daddy, like your goal is 500 schools. I think they've built 400 schools over the last 20 years around Burma, Laos, Cambodia, like the border of Thailand. But no one really, they don't have much, like they have very little social media. They're known within their big private donors, but the rest of the world doesn't know this incredible, incredible work that they've done over the last 20 years. It's like so inspiring. I don't know. I don't know if they're like, the reason I'm telling you is this is like, I hope that you can kind of use your story to showcase it, like put it up on a mountain, put a light on it, and like, let's bring this story to more people, because it's inspiring. It's something that, you know, you guys built off something that I think is within reach and manageable, like a budget that's within reach and manageable for most people listening to this show. That's why I wanted to be sure to bring it to the listeners, because I think it's something that everyone can take something from, right? Hats off to you guys on the really good work, inspiring work. Also, on behalf of the iLab community, we'll make a small pledge, but hopefully it's helpful for you guys. So based on the needs that I know that you guys have, we're going to contribute one new computer for whatever you guys want. If you want it for administrative use or for the kids, it can be a Mac, it can be a Dell, whatever you guys want. We're also going to donate $1,000 cash. Also $1,000 cash. And I'll join the Patreon just to make sure that you guys have some reoccurring revenue coming in. And, you know, we have a Patreon group also. And whenever I see a good Patreon, I like to join to you know, pay it forward. It's like, when you work in a restaurant, you always take care of the restaurant staff a little bit better, right? So like, when we have a Patreon group, we're always on lookouts to kind of support other Patreon groups, because we know how important it is to have a little bit of that consistent money coming in each month that you can rely on. So
that's really amazing and very appreciative, Sam. I mean, that's basically a month of operating costs for us. So it definitely helps things to move forward. And that's the way we're doing it right now, is I wouldn't say we're thinking about the next month, but we are thinking about the next few months and making sure that we move that ball a little bit forward. So your contribution definitely takes us much further and much appreciated. And also knowing that you believe in us and the work that we're doing, it's very, very appreciated, and gives me motivation to kind of push on this.
Thank you so much.
500. Nothing short of 500 centers is acceptable in this lifetime.
One good center is what we're going with begin with.
Where do you guys want to point people to take a look? I mean, I know you have Instagram and your website looks great. Where else? Is there anything else that people should look into?
I would put the first focus on our Patreon and our Instagram. We're updating the Instagram most regularly. The website, we're going to redo kind of to take some of the things from the finished school and to be able to do it. And then through Instagram, you could actually get in contact with us. If you guys are here, want to do a tour, if people want to do a personal donation, similar to iLab, which we very much appreciate. Those are the best places on it. The point that you made earlier, Sam, is doing the social media and the marketing of this is almost a full-time job on top of the things that and Daddy and I both run our day jobs, do a part of this, and then Daddy, God bless him, does that part as well, but it's a lot of work. So we've thought about hiring somebody to do that. We actually did hire somebody, but it was hard to get them to be the right focus on it. So we've opened that room up again. So this idea of bringing more exposure is something that we definitely understand as a pain point and something that we could grow on. So doing things like this with you and your support definitely helps. And we want to learn those things to do it. So I know you have a passion for bringing exposure into things like this, and it's something that I'm happy to kind of talk with you about. But yeah, our Instagram is Paduli Learning Center. People could find it. I'm sure you'll share the links in terms of that and the Patreon. And then you guys could hit us up directly as well from there.
Cool. And for people that know Bali, where are you guys located on the island?
So we are about a 15-minute drive north of Canggu, north of Barawa. If people are familiar, Canggu is kind of where most of the expats are settling right now. Canggu is kind of also the very, very hip expat area. And this is a place where a lot of the kids' parents work there, but also there's just not enough exposure to that outside. So people are welcome to come visit. You could search Paduli on the map for us.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, thanks for sharing the morning with you, with us and the iLab listeners and community. Thanks for the good work and the inspiration to start this year.
Thank you, Sam.
We appreciate the inspiration very much. Thank you very much.
Hey, bosses. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. The show will be right back.
Sam, I have to say, I'm actually very, very impressed, especially the fact that I watched, I looked at the videos and looked at the photos of it being built from nothing, knowing how cheap that land is, and then actually seeing, you know, a working school. I think that's pretty impressive.
I could not believe going into the numbers how cheap it was. I mean, we hear like Bali is, we knew Bali used to be cheap, but now I think everyone's under the impression that's totally unaffordable. Mm. I mean, the property prices, by most people's accounts, have gone up two, three, four times just in the last few years. And it was already on to kind of this exponential curve up over the last decade. But
man, they got that land super cheap, and the cost of construction is super cheap. So even if you pay a lot for land, what's kind of cool in this region is even if you pay a lot for land, you can still build for nothing. Like you can still build a nice house for 30 grand, 40 grand in a lot of these places.
Well, I encourage everyone to go take a look at the website because it's very nice for a school, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's what people imagine a Bali style villa to look like. Yeah. Do you know how much Kevin spent on his?
Kevin spent on his villa?
Yeah.
I think he bought it for something in the range of 600 or 700. And then I think he put in another 300 or 400. It's probably tripled in value already.
So, I mean, you mean thousands. So it's like $1 million he put in now. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's the type of property most people are thinking of. This is, very nice, but it's definitely more basic and it's definitely outside of the tourist area. But you're right that, if you want to be outside of Canggu Beach or in Ubud, outside of the tourist areas, there still are lots of local places. And especially if you're doing something good like this, that's how they got the good deal. But I can imagine that if people start trying to gentrify these areas and building their tourist business there, they're going to try to raise the prices on you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Johnny, there's always a quote that I like to go back to that was by a very famous guy, Leo Tolstoy. And he quoted, "A quiet, secluded life in the country." This is actually a reflection on his life when he was an older guy. And he had lived through so much. He'd like been through communist Russia, very poor, made it big as like a writer, got very famous, and lived in kind of poverty, but also riches in the city and outside the city. And he was reflecting on life and he quoted, "A quiet, secluded life in the country with the possibility of being useful to people to whom it is easy to do good and who are not accustomed to have it done to them. Then work with one hopes may be of some use. Then rest, nature, books, music, love for one's neighbor. Such is my idea of happiness." So that's kind of what he wrote as a reflection of his life. And the first half of that is all about just being in a place where it's possible to do good and people are appreciative. And I know, you just went through kind of this multi-year chapter of your life in war-torn Ukraine, but you were involved there a lot in all types of projects, from just like helping clean up trash and stuff to delivering bread. And I imagine, I'd like to hear from you, but I imagine, even though you're living in somewhat of a really rough part of the world at that time, and unstable and dangerous, I imagine there's a bunch of joy in just being able to help people and the people being able to, be appreciative of what you're able to do for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think whenever people say, "Oh, you should do charity just to do charity or donate just to donate," I actually don't think that. I don't think that's the way to do it. I think people should give, and whether it's money or time, to things that they have connection with. And for me to be able to help locally and actually help these people who were suffering for something that wasn't their fault, during a very bad time, when they really needed it, that was very, very rewarding for me. So it's one of those things where, on one hand, you can say, if you are a wealthy entrepreneur living in Bali and just eating $15, avocado bowls every day, yeah, maybe you should be giving 10 or 20 bucks to helping, this school, mm-hmm. because you are using, their land, you are there, and, they probably don't have much else of a connection to the locals besides the surfer dudes, who are basically gentrified, versions of the Indonesians themselves. But one would ask that, that play to play devil's advocate a little bit, is why is it up to us as the foreigners to do this when Bali brings in so much money and so much, tax revenue from all these luxury hotels and villas? Is it, and Indonesia, I just looked it up, it's really, really high on the corruption index, and I wonder if there's these big wigs sitting in the office saying, "Aha, screw these kids, these poor kids. The foreigners will build the schools. Why should we do it?"
Yeah. Well, it's kind of always the game in the world is waiting for someone else to do it. We just got to kind of do good where we can. I thought it was really interesting to compare, what they've built is such a cool thing that they're able to go in and enjoy each day. But at the same time, it's like they just gave birth to a baby. Mm-hmm. It's like you you kind of are responsible for that going forward, right? You need to make sure it's funded. You can't really turn your back on it. So in comparison to, say, writing a check for 30 grand, you know, maybe having a quick, oh, that was cool, saw that get built, and then you're done, wipe your hands, versus this where you're involved. I mean, and that comes with its own set of pros and cons. I think we touched on in the episode, but what's your flavor, Johnny? What would you do? Would you rather just give the money to someone and just be like, okay, cool, I'm going to go for the opening and then walk away? Or would you rather have this in your backyard and be able to participate?
So actually, this exact question came up a long time ago. It's probably 10 years ago now, it was like 2014 when I first started making money. And I thought, you know what, I should give back to Thailand because I've been here, you know, for so many years. It was always such a big part of my life. And I saw there was a foreign couple, or she's Canadian and he's Thai, and they wanted to open a school, a Muay Thai school in Isan. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just going to be for Muay Thai. It was, you know, literally going to be like a little learning center. So very, very similar to these guys are doing in Bali, but instead of IT, it's Muay Thai based, you know, with other social skills. And they wanted to build a gym from the ground up. They wanted to build some accommodation. They wanted, you know, to be able to feed these kids, because all of them just came from, you know, really, really poor areas. As anyone who's been to Thailand knows, you know, Isan is the poorest region in Thailand. So I asked her, I said, hey, I can give you, you know, I can write you like a $300 donation now, or I see there's another option where, you know, I could do like a monthly donation or something, you know, 500 or 1,000 baht or something. I was like, what would you prefer? And I was really shocked when she said, you know, please sign up for the monthly donation. It's better for us. And I said, like, how is that better? It would take you over a year to get, you know, that same amount of money. Wouldn't you rather just have it now? And she's like, no, it's better for us to know we have a certain amount of money coming every month so we can, you know, pay the bills and pay the teachers and everything. And I said, yeah, okay, sure. That's fine. I mean, it's been 10 years now, me paying that. I've never canceled it. Mm-hmm. It's been on auto pay. So she's definitely got a lot more than the initial 300 bucks I was going to give. I think that is the best way to do it, because yes, it does cost money to initially start something up, but I think it's way more important for them to have consistent funding to keep it going. Because if they can't get it built in the first place, they probably never would have been successful, you know, regardless. Mm-hmm. But once it's, you know, once they put in the sweat, once they put in that first, you know, amount of money through friends and family, through their own personal investments, you know, then it's kind of up to the general public or people who are connected somehow to it to be able to keep it going.
Yeah, I agree. And good on you for those contributions. You might want to write them, Johnny, because after you told me about them the first time, I'm like, man, I want to support them. So I reached out to them and I never heard back. So I basically reached out like, hey, I want to contribute. Like, what's the best way to support you guys? And I never heard back. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Maybe their web form's broken, but it's probably worth making sure your dollars aren't going into a black hole.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. Okay, cool.
All right, cool. So let's go ahead and draw our first three winners.
Yes.
Before that, I will say we've already contributed on behalf of all the iLab listeners out there. We've contributed both a new computer and $1,000 to Paduli to support them in their good work. So thanks to all the listeners supporting the show. And we're paying it forward. So now into the listeners. So here's what we're doing, guys. We're going to draw random numbers. I found this thing on Google. Basically, pick a random number between 1 and 2 type of thing. It's pretty easy. Yeah, right. Exactly. So there's 56 people that filled out this survey. We're going to do this at the end of every month. This month will be the first drawing. We'll give away 3 in April and 3 in May. So 56 people have done it so far. If you guys want to be in the next drawing, if you already filled out the survey, you're automatically included. If not, just fill out the survey in the show notes. It's very quick. I think it's only 6 question multiple choice, and it helps us to plan new episodes and new content for you guys. So let's go ahead and do it. I'm going to click start. And
I pulled it up. Can I do it just so everyone knows we're not cheating?
Yeah. You found a thing, like a tool, right? There's a bunch of them online.
So 1 to 56.
1 to 56.
I'm going to click generate. And number 52, who's that?
52. Okay, 52 is Joe Connolly.
Derek Sparks. And all.
No, Derek's number one. He's the first one to fill it out. Yeah.
Okay.
Joe Connolly. Okay. Joe, thanks for filling out the survey. We'll connect with you. Oh, we'll just pull the other two, and then I'll tell them.
Yeah. And what books are these, by the way? Is this Sam's autobiography?
No, it's totally up to them. So the easiest way is we send you a one credit on Audible. Another way we can do it, if you live in a place that Amazon ships, we'll ship you a physical book of your choice under $20. Okay. And the third is not as optimal because we do want to send you a book. But if you don't have access to either of the two for some reason, we'll just send you $15 on PayPal.
No,
but
take the book. I'll send them an e-version of one of my books. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. If you don't have either of those two, you get an e-version of Johnny's book.
All right.
Okay. So let's draw number two. Yeah.
Here we go. Number 43.
43. That sounds like
Derek's mom.
Eliha Henry. All right. Eliha Henry. Number 43.
Last but not least, number 30.
Number 30. That's going to be a good one. I know it. Who's lucky number 30? That is David Welpton. Okay. David Welpton, you're getting a free book. So those three people, we will reach out by emails, assuming we have your email. And we'll arrange to get, so start thinking about whatever book you want us to send to you. And thanks for supporting us by filling out this survey. We've got some awesome data from this. We'll share the aggregate data also with everybody. And so everyone can see a little bit more of kind of our users' interest as a whole.
Yeah, and awesome. And if anyone can't think of a book that they should be reading, definitely, you know, Tony Robbins' Money Master the Game or his new kind of Unshakable variant. I would say that's definitely one of the must reads. Sam, is there something that you would throw out there?
That's so funny you mentioned Tony Robbins, man, because I actually want to read his new book on stem cells and peptides. Yeah. That's going to be the next. I'm sure that's a big book to read. It's probably one of those 20-hour audios. But I learned so much from his Money Master the Game. I thank him indefinitely for writing that book. It basically launched the podcast for us.
Yeah.
So I think this will be the next one because now that we're closing in on our mid-ages or our mid-age, health and wellness is so important.
So that book is called Life Force. You know, I kind of want that as well. I might be filling out the survey to try to get myself to win.
All right. You can fill it out twice with aliases, Johnny. We won't know.
There you go. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Sam, thanks for hopping on. And fill out those surveys if you see them in your email. And maybe next episode. Well, next month, you'll be winning something yourself.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.